financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Raham.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. Let me start again. Sorry, I didn't press play. Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Raham. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am great. We have a guest today.
Guess who we have today?
Somebody who's had before, I believe, right?
It's not
like
fair to
guess.
It's not fair to ask you to guess, but we've had him before, and I just love it when he comes on because he's all about what we're about, which is education. So we have Justin Lawrence from the Franklin County Technical School right here in Turner's Falls, Mass. Often we have somebody from far away, but we got a local guy today, and he is the coordinator for the adult education program. And so welcome back, Justin.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's cool, except it's not morning here, and we forgot to tell you that. So can you just pick up again with hi?
Absolutely. Hello. Thank you so much for having me back.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming. So, you know, I love the idea of this adult education. And just to give our listeners and viewers a little bit of a background, even though I'd been in town for years, and so has Franklin County Tech School, I became interested in it because I received one of your brochures in the mail. It was an 8.5 by 11, beautiful looking brochure. I thought it came from a college and it came from the tech school. And I called my boyfriend right away and I said, hey, I got this great pamphlet from a tech school and they're getting it done. I mean, look at the stuff they've got. And it really rivaled anything I've seen from a community college, for instance. In fact, I recently saw an interview with several of the local community colleges on the interview, and they were offering very similar, at least one of them was offering similar programs to what you offer right here at the tech school. So could I get you to talk to me about that a bit? What do you offer right now for adult education?
Absolutely. So currently, we are the very proud recipients of the Career and Technical Initiative grant. It's from the state of Massachusetts, and it enables us to provide tuition-free education for qualifying adults to train in new career paths so that they can find high-paying jobs while simultaneously filling holes in the Massachusetts workforce. So it's a beautiful partnership between the state and a lot of the technical schools in the Commonwealth to do just that, provide a really good education, which is what we're experts at, while filling holes in the state's economy, which is great.
Yeah, I think there's going to be more and more of this, actually, if we zoom out to a macroeconomic picture for a moment. With the federal government pushing more things on the states are finding new ways, creative ways, I hope, to support their citizens. And one of those is to try and get and keep them off of some sort of state aid so that the states can survive on the money they do have. And in order to get that done, helping people get to the next level of income and the next level in their career is brilliant and paramount, and the kinds of things we want to do for people who are prideful and who want to get there in life. Yes, I can see it on your face. Well, you have something to say.
Especially when we're talking about, we talk a lot about college loans and kind of all of that stuff. Trade fields just seem so much more, people are looking to that more, where you're not going to have this huge loan to pay off at the end of it, and you're going to get a high-paying job in most of these trade fields.
Yeah. Yeah, Justin was just telling me, maybe, is it okay to talk about somebody who's not here? We had hoped to have her as a guest, but yeah, okay. So I love the success stories, and Justin was just telling me about someone, and I won't rain on his parade. I'll let him tell. I think you know the story I mean.
Yeah, are you talking about Li Ming?
I am. I didn't want to mention her by name, but she's just one example, but she's a very recent example. So would you share her story with us?
Absolutely. So she came to us as a really hardworking person who was working in the service industry, was, working really, really hard and looking for the next opportunity. And so when she stumbled across our program, she applied and we did an interview. Was very impressed with her initiative and her resolve and her commitment. And so we welcomed her into our auto technology program. She trained for 12 weeks while simultaneously working and raising children and leading a full life. It was a big commitment for her, but she finished really, really strong. She showed great promise in a couple of the technical areas of the training, specifically the electrical systems of vehicles and testing the electrical systems and repairing them. And she had a great aptitude just naturally for that area of the training. She passed with flying colors, did very, very well. If we had a grading system, she would have gotten an A plus, but we don't. And when she graduated, she really, hit the streets and put in a lot of applications and got a couple of really great offers. The offer that she decided to go with was with a foreign high dollar car dealership in a local dealer, and she's going to be working in their service department and doing an excellent job already of breaking into the industry. So we couldn't be prouder of her and what this shift meant for her, both in regard to earning potential, but also in regard to how scary it might be for some people to leave everything that they've known in regards to work and to step into a new place. And as a woman, to step into a male-dominated field and to be the greenest and the newest person takes an incredible amount of courage. And all of that is being rewarded. All of her work is being rewarded, and we just couldn't be prouder of her.
Well, I love that story. It just ticks so many boxes for me. I happen to know what kind of dealership she's working at, and I have that kind of car. And I can tell you, I can't wait to meet her. I've never met her, but I can't wait to meet her. And I was a little bit of a gearhead when I was younger, still probably am a bit. And so I really love the idea of a woman. I know somebody will write into me about this, but I love the idea of a woman working in that dealership in the service department and doing what she wanted to do. And against the odds, as you said, she started in the service industry. I'm assuming you mean like wait staff service industry, right? Yeah, food service. Okay. And
Food
so she's
service.
gone from that to something else while she's got kids and going to school, fighting the odds all the way. But I'm going to say something to you because you're too modest to say it yourself. That would not happen without the level of support that she got at Franklin County Tech School. If she had been somewhere else where somebody just said, well, I'm sorry, but you're on your own over here, she may not have made it. Your students fight lots of real life problems like kids and transportation and things like that, which I want to talk to you about. But the first thing that I want to mention that we've never talked about before is something you brought up that I think people went, but what do you mean, no grading system?
Was that the technical term?
Yeah, that's the technical term. So, talk to us about no grading system. How appealing is that for somebody who's trying to stick their toe in the water here and jump in?
Yeah, so we, especially in the realm of adult education, we don't waste any time with any of the arbitrary processes that maybe some traditional schools still abide by. We do definitely have benchmarks and expectations around attendance and work ethic and progressing through the curriculum. But we don't assign grades. We are encouraged and actually mandated by the grant funder, the Commonwealth Corporation, to provide industry recognized credentials. So for many of our programs, you know, it would be a HotWorks certificate or an OSHA card. It might also be an industry certificate that would help to earn someone a job in a job interview. And those are what we use to help people progress through the program to graduation. And so they could potentially graduate and leave our program without having earned any, but none of them do. They all really buckle down and do a great job of earning everything that is available to them, which is really great. And it also is important for us that we're not asking them to perform for the sake of performance. Everything that they're working on, everything that they're learning has a real life application and something that will benefit them in their future career.
Yeah, I have to say that Jess brought up, you know, the idea of student loans and the push toward tech school. I'm seeing statistics that say, I don't know if they're true, but I'm seeing statistics that say that enrollment in adult education programs at tech schools outpaced enrollment in community colleges in the last year. That almost wouldn't surprise me, even though community college tuition is now free in the state, right? So to me, that says that this trend that Jess and I have been talking about for years, which is similar to doctors telling their children, don't go into the medicine field because it's just not what it used to be, right? The idea that you're going to go to college, you're going to rack up these student loans in order to get your career off the ground works for a lot of people, but it doesn't work for everybody. And for people who didn't have a college path in mind, to be trapped in a much lower earning job because there's no other outlet, no other path for them, is pretty lousy. So I really love, and let me point out, we need people who do things, okay? I love my brainiacs, right? But we need people who know how to change a faucet if we can't do it. Who know how to repair your car. And so I think having a place where people get this education, certainly the state funding sees it, right? The grant people see it, Career Technical Initiative, right? The CTI grant that you guys survive on, right? Which is what provides this free tuition for people. It understands that if we train people, they get to a better level and they provide things back to the community that we need right here in our own area. Yeah. Great model. Can you talk to us just a little bit? We have about another minute before break, but can you talk to us about what kind of eligibility criteria somebody has? How much money can they make less than and still qualify for free tuition? And what happens after that?
Sure. So for the CTI grant programs, there are a couple of non-negotiables for qualifying for the grant funding. One is that they live and reside in the state of Massachusetts. One is that they earn less than the poverty level. So for folks who are living in Franklin County, and it's designated by county and it's different in each one. In Franklin County, it's $48,500 a year. And then the last real qualifier is that the person is committed to working full time in the industry in which they train. So they have to be over the age of 18. But there's no age cap. As long as they fit those four criteria, they are a really good candidate for one of our programs.
That's fabulous. When we come back, I want to talk to you more about what happens if people don't fit in that criteria. They're not kicked out. They can still participate. So we'll talk about that.
All right. In the meantime, let's get your number, Frances.
Sure, Jess. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can also go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness right here on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram. Hi,
and Justin Lawrence from Franklin County Technical School. So welcome back, Justin. I chopped you off just before the break. We were talking about how people qualify for the adult education program if they fit these four criteria. And one of them is that they have to make less than $48,500 in Massachusetts. I think the federal poverty level is something like 49.1 right now. But if you're above that, or if you don't live or work in Massachusetts, you can still participate in this. Is that correct? How do you do
It
it?
is. Yeah, absolutely. So we would ask students to go through the same application process just so that we know all of the information about them that we need. And then, if space allows in our programs, we take tuition students into the CTI programs. It's a reasonable $3,000 for the 12-week, 20-hour-a-week training. So it's a total of 230 hours of hands-on learning experience, and they can pay the tuition to us in pieces. We break it down for whatever is convenient for them, so long as they provide a 10% deposit for the class. We'll work with them through the training so that they can make it to the end.
That sounds incredibly affordable for anything like this. And I know that you have job placement help and things like that, but I want to just touch on some of your partnerships because you are local and you have partnerships with the Peterson School, Greenfield Community College. We just talked about community colleges, right? And Mass Hire. So you don't just train these people, you're working to support them into their careers.
Absolutely. So we approach our students as a full, whole person. And so the first thing that we do is to lean into Maslow's need hierarchy and really try to view them as a complete person and make sure that they are at a place where they are able to receive the education that we're providing. So we've got a little bit of financial incentive from the grant funder to help them with some of those daily life struggles that they might be having. Then to continue our work as approaching the whole person, we provide to them a really great program. Actually, Mass Hire provides to them a really great, well-rounded employment education that would include things like resume writing, cover letter writing, how to rock an interview. Each student is assigned a career counselor, and that person works with them one-on-one to make sure that when they graduate after the 12 weeks, they are as ready to apply and interview for a job as possible. The job market is forever changing, and the hiring process is forever changing and can be really intimidating for somebody who hasn't been involved in that kind of transaction in a long time.
Yeah, for
So
sure.
it's
That's an
helpful.
incredible amount of support that I just think it's amazing that you are understanding, you're meeting these people where they are. I love that you said rock the interview so they can learn how to rock the interview. That was just great. Can you explain a little bit more about what somebody experiences? First of all, which programs you offer now, what the experience might be like how many days a week they go. And then maybe give us a little teaser about what might be coming down the pike.
Absolutely. So currently, we offer five CTI programs. We offer them in horticulture, electrical, auto technology, welding, and carpentry and construction arts. So those are the five. Very rarely do all five run at the same time. Usually we have four in progress. And the student can expect 12 weeks. And when we start, we run Monday through Thursday from 4 to 9 p.m. With a little bit of a meal break there in the middle. So they are coming to school. I always describe it to applicants as taking on a new part-time job. It is a 20-hour-a-week commitment, and it's one that needs a lot of devotion because we move so quickly through the curriculum. There isn't a lot of opportunity to make up the work if a student is consistently absent. So
Sure.
when they're admitted, we have to make sure that they have a good idea of what they're getting into and that they're committed to the whole course.
So it's not for the faint of heart, but if you're serious about doing this, this is a path for you to get there, right? I remember when we first met, I said to you, "Do you have a course in this? I would take this as a homeowner, you know." So tell us, are you allowed to tell us right now what's coming? I
I
put you on the
am.
spot.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll be careful to preface and say that we have applied for another round of this funding. The governor and the workforce board has committed to funding another round. The rounds last 2 years, and so we put in an application for $2.1 million to be able to offer more of the trainings in those five programs I just talked about, but we're also looking to add two additional disciplines. One would be in plumbing and heating, and the other would be in facility maintenance. So we have submitted the application. We haven't heard back if we've been awarded yet, but we're very hopeful and counting on hopefully
Yes.
getting this grant.
But after the 12 weeks, what do you get a certification? Like, obviously, you're not a plumber or an electrician after 12 weeks. You got to go through the journeyman and all of that. So, what is it exactly that you get at the end of specifically those fields?
Excellent question. So we offer an opportunity and an initial education so that you can find an entry-level position in those fields. So on completing our course, a student would be able to approach a master plumber or a master or journeyman electrician and to get a job with them as an apprentice with some hands-on and code knowledge. So our electrical students graduate with 150 hours of their code licensure hours that come from the state. So we do our best to equip them with the technical knowledge and hands-on experience that they need to be attractive to those folks.
So at that point, you do give them some support in job placement.
Absolutely. So one of the things that we are sure to share early on in the application process is employment is not guaranteed. Unfortunately, I don't have a stack of open positions where I can place students, but the school and our supporters are incredibly well connected to both our community and our community that's a little bit further away. So Hamden, Hampshire, Worcester, Berkshire County. We have lots and lots of connections. And so we invite employers to come in to speak to students and start to begin relationships and networking. We have career fairs, we have guest speakers, and we have community sponsors and partners who are committed to interviewing and giving a chance for open positions to some of our students. So, in the grand scheme of things, most of the students who are hired out of our program are going to businesses that are right here in Franklin County and who we have had working relationships with for most of them years now.
So it brings the question to me about something like right now it's the season, right? And you have a horticulture program. Do people from your horticulture program go out and work on their own? Do they have to? I mean, how does that differ, for instance, from something like electrical or plumbing where you do need to go through the apprenticeship? Do you have to do that with horticulture as well?
Great question. Not necessarily. We are very clear with our students that after 12 weeks, they probably will not have a mastery level knowledge of the field. And so we don't necessarily encourage folks hanging out a shingle or starting their own business at first. We do like to inspire and fan the flame of, future entrepreneurs while they are with us. And so if someone has an entrepreneurial spirit, we definitely encourage them to continue through their training, while also being realistic that they're going to have to work, in another capacity for another company or another master until they're able to do that.
Yeah, I think that's important. We see a lot of businesses fail. In fact, most businesses where people just start up a business, they want to make nice business cards and brochures and dream about how the phone is going to ring off the hook, and but they don't necessarily have the skills about segregating their advertising budget and learning what they need to learn to market and sustain and pay their taxes, for instance, right? A lot of self-employed people end up, doing fine for the first year, and then, oh, wow, I owe the IRS a lot of money because I didn't segregate my tax money and pay it in. So I think setting realistic expectations is probably one of the best and kindest things you can do, because then they know what they're studying for, they know where they're going to get, and they're prepared to want the next level if they want to get beyond that. But it gets them into a place where they're able to make, hopefully, a stable income in the field that they want to be working in. And it's quite a leap. I mean, you are transforming somebody's life. I don't think that's overstating this. When you take somebody from food service and put them into automotive repair, that's a transformation. Now, you could do it the other way and it would still be a transformation, right? But that brings with it a whole list of different things that a different culture, a different experience, a different sense of self, perhaps. And so I think that's a really, really powerful thing. Can you briefly tell me what you do for outreach now to make sure that people know that these programs are available and what your utopian dream might be for Franklin County Tech School adult program?
Sure. So, a quick shameless plug is we have more than just the CTI programs. And so we are also offering some community workshops, some community classes. The superintendent had given me a directive when I first took this position to make Franklin County Tech feel like the community's school, a resource for everyone in the community, whether they're looking for a new job or they have a high school student. Franklin Tech should feel like home to them. And so we're trying to do that with all of our other programming outside of CTI, supporting entrepreneurs, supporting recreation. And we're getting the word out about all of these programs through our brochure, through our website, through things like this. But honest to goodness, the most effective form of marketing that I have found so far has been twofold. It's been the word of mouth and people talking about their experiences, and also our folks, our friends at Mass Hire. They are so great at sharing what we're doing and the purpose for which we're doing it with the greater community, and they've got such an excellent platform. I'll also take a quick opportunity to mention Greenfield Community College. We have an excellent partnership with them. They host some of their training on our campus, and we work very closely in making sure that although we have similar missions and messages, that we're complementing each other and that we're working together to offer our area the best and most well-rounded education possible. And so through those outlets, we see an excellent return on our marketing investment.
If I sound enthusiastic about Franklin County Technical School, I should say it's not because they sponsor our show, although they do sponsor our show. That just sort of happened organically, right? But this is something that I think is in the community, of the community, and for the community. And I don't see a flaw in that. So I want to thank you again for coming on and chatting with us about this. And I hope you'll come back and maybe share some more stories with us about other students.
I would love to. Thanks for having me.
You
Justin,
bet.
do you want to maybe share your website with us before you go?
Absolutely. Yes, people can find us at fcts.us.
Thank you. And Francis, as always, I need your phone number because people will have questions.
Of course, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness right here on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am good. And we have a guest today, and it's a familiar face.
I'm always happy when he comes on the show. So we have Senator Michael D. Brown, the non-voting shadow senator. He's also an economist, and I've asked him to be here today so that we could talk about money and other things. So, welcome back, Senator Brown.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be with you. This is one of my favorite things to do, is to talk to you. And let me
Oh.
tell you that since you brought it up, and since it's tax day, and since I just put my check in the mail to the federal government, I have to point out that yes, the people of the District of Columbia pay the highest per capita taxes in America, but yet we don't have a voting member of Congress. And we really need to change that. But that being said, let's move on to the things that you want to talk about.
Well, nice try, but I have one more little thing to talk about. Not a little thing, a couple of things for you, just to set the background for people about what you've been doing. So, a shadow senator doesn't get paid. So, you've been doing this out of the goodness of your heart. Maybe that's how politics should work. But we're talking about what, 700,000 people in D.C.?
700,000 people,
Yeah,
yes. And
700,000 people in D.C. You put a sign on your lawn about 4 years ago. That I just saw posted on X, if anybody wants to go and look for it. Big warning sign, basically telling people, look, if you want to live in DC, you might be giving up your basic civil right. You are giving up your basic civil right to vote. Now, 700,000 people, I have to wonder, out of 700,000 people, how many people you think, just ballpark, are unhappy with the way things are going with the economy today and what's going on with the government. Maybe those are separate questions, but can you give us some insight on what you feel in DC?
Well, you know, in DC, there are no Republicans in DC. I mean, there's like six of them, and we keep track of them with those little ankle bracelets. But we're the most Democratic jurisdiction, and by Democratic, I mean Democratic Party in America. 80% of registered voters that have a party affiliation are Democrats. When you win the Democratic primary in Washington, D.C., you don't even bother to go out on election day. You just go out and give donuts. You don't campaign, because no one who has ever won the Democratic primary has ever lost a general election. So we're never happy with any Republican, to be honest with you. You know, we're liberal Democrats. But now, especially, people in Washington, D.C. feel wounded. One reason is because of a recent move that was made in the budget process, in the budget bill that was passed by the House, and now passed by the Senate. We lose $1.1 billion of our own money. I mean, this is ridiculous. We cannot spend $1.1 billion of our own tax money, money that we've raised in local taxes, and between now and October 30th. We have to cut $1.1 billion out of our budget because of the way Congress has handled the district. We've been told that we should be treated like an agency instead of like any agency of the federal government. So they've cut this money out of our budget. Now, the hope is the Senate passed a standalone bill that would allow us to spend the money, but the House hasn't moved on it, and they would have to move on it. So right now, in this morning's paper, they cut out 400, they said they have to cut out at least $417 million immediately out of our budget
Okay, so
to comply.
you know where I'm headed with this, right? Jobs,
Jobs.
jobs, jobs. I mean, my goodness, how many jobs are Americans going to lose, and where are they going to go? And what's going to happen to our economy when we start making cuts like that? And we are already making cuts like that. I know people, Jess probably knows people who have already lost their job with no consideration about whether they were talented or a good employee, nothing, just we're sorry, you're out of work. That cannot happen in a bubble. Anybody who has ever taken an economics course will tell you, you don't want job loss, okay? It trickles down in ways that you can't imagine. And I worry. People are asking me, you know, are we going into recession? Are we going into depression? I mean, people are worried about money. People that never paid attention to money are worried about money.
Well, and especially in the District of Columbia. You know, we pay the highest per capita taxes in America because we're the richest people in America. So we generally don't worry about it. But the federal government, which is what keeps us a top economy in the country, is being decimated. You know, 87,000 jobs from the Veterans Administration, USAID, you know, all sorts of other cuts. They're also talking about moving agencies into the states for some reason I don't understand. But right now we have Ohio and Vermont and Massachusetts and other states fighting over what federal agencies they can suck out of the District of Columbia. So the district's economy may be totally devastated by the time this is all over. So we're very, very worried about it. And, you know, and I got to tell you, when the president of the United States stands up there and says there's going to be short-term pain for long-term gain, he doesn't understand what it is to live paycheck to paycheck. Because we should all remember what John Kenneth Galbraith said, which is in the long run, we're all dead. So, you know, for many Americans, it's always right now. I grew up in a family that was in kind of middle-class suburbia, but we were always broke, always. We never owned a house, evicted many times for not paying the rent, cars repossessed. My mother was one of those women that dug nickels and dimes out of the couch to pay the $2 for the field trip when I was a kid in school. Never poor, always had food to eat, always had people that loved me, always had a roof over my head.
But always broke. Scrambling. Yeah.
And I've worked full time since I was 14 years old, which is why I stopped to do this when I was in my 50s, because I had made enough money that I decided I should give back somehow. And that's why I took a job that didn't pay me for 18 years. I don't know that my wife and kids were so happy about that, but I had enough money. I put all my kids through college. I figured, how much money do you need? Right. So that's why I did it. But I understand what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck. And in the front page of the Washington Post today, there's an article about a farmer in North Carolina who can't figure out what he's going to do because of the uncertainty with tariffs. He just doesn't know. There's no way for him to plan how many people he needs to hire, how many crops, what the crops should be. You know, are we going to put a tariff on soybeans? Maybe you shouldn't grow them. You know, he doesn't know.
You know, you brought up two important points, I think. One, with your quote, made me think that, because we try to be fair-minded as much as we can, but my point is, we're not hurting just Democrats. We're hurting Republicans, too. Yeah. We're hurting independents. We're hurting people who never voted, right? If you live in this country right now, you're getting hurt by this. And there's another quote that people are fond of flipping around, like, you know, hey, the person who dies with the most toys wins. Well, in my world, what that means is that you're spending almost every dollar you make, or you're leveraged to the hilt, and you've got these debt payments. And we talk a lot about student debt payments, but everybody's living on debt. They got car loans and mortgages. And when you start cutting jobs like this, you're going to have a real, real problem. And the second thing was really about people living paycheck to paycheck. People don't have savings. You know, we've been telling people for years, oh, you've got to have 6 months worth of savings. I dare you to take a poll of the average American and ask who's got 6 months in liquid savings. Are there some? You betcha. But not the middle class or lower middle class or lower class, right, if we even have those classes anymore. So, yeah, I mean, the farmer, you know, the big point that you brought up I wanted to get back to is the planning. As an investment advisor or a financial planner, what our jobs are to tell people, this is what I see coming down the pike. Here's how to prepare. Here's what to do. Jess has heard me say this lately, like, all I can do is freeze like a rabbit in the head, you know, in the headlights and say, okay, what we have to do right now is realize we're all in crisis management mode. And that means you make very conservative decisions. I was just talking to a doctor the other day who canceled an order for a machine at their hospital that was hundreds of thousands of dollars. He wasn't sure if the tariffs on China were going to bring that price way up. But more than that, he can't make a decision. He doesn't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't, what was it I said a couple of weeks ago to you, Jess? You know, consistency and competency breeds confidence.
Yeah, we were talking about the market and about how that's so important, the certainty and the consistency, and it's day to day at this point.
Yeah, and we don't have that. So, you know, I'm happy to have a senator here, and I would welcome a Republican senator to come on too if they're willing to take me on.
If they're brave enough.
Bring it on, baby. Because, you know, there are some Republicans are starting to turn a little bit and say, this is not okay. This is hurting everybody, right? Can you put the shoe on the other foot for a moment, if it's even possible, and give us any insight as to what you think the good side of these tariffs might be? I was going to be more descriptive, but I'll just leave them at these tariffs.
Well, I really don't see a good side, because what's happening is, you know, there's two schools of thought about this, right? There's people out there saying he's using this as a negotiating tool. Well, if he uses it as a negotiating tool, he's getting his rear end kicked. He's given into the Chinese on electronics. He's given into car makers today. He's going to give in, you know, I drink 16 cups of coffee. I guarantee you he's going to give in to the coffee people soon. So he's losing on the negotiation side. On the other side, to put tariffs on countries that are poor to begin with and have very low tariffs. You know, we've seen this with some of the Indonesian countries that make all our clothes now. I worked my way through college and graduate school by working for a men's clothing store in the days, a very expensive men's clothing store, in the days where all our clothes were made in America, all the clothes that we sold. Yeah. You can't find anything made in America. I don't know if you go in far as clothes go. I mean, check the tags in your clothes. You see they're all made in places like Sri Lanka and Indonesia and Thailand. I think I wrote to you in an email that when I studied tariffs, they were a tool. And this man seems to be using them as a weapon. And I really got to be honest with you. I don't know where this all comes from, because look at all his businesses. I don't care if he's selling Bibles, or it's a college, or it's a steak business, or it's a hotel in Atlantic City. This man has failed at every business he's ever been in. And now we expect him to rearrange the most complex government on the face of the earth. I mean, it's crazy to even think of that.
Yeah, you know, somehow I knew we were never going to escape the politics on this show. There was no point in it. But, you know, I complained about this when Trump ran the first time. And I said, I don't understand why nobody is talking about, or very few people were talking about, six bankruptcies. Why weren't we talking about the fact that he never paid his employees? What, you know, why was this not a basic American concern for the general person who can't figure this out? And, you know, for themselves, they, you know, who do you know that's filed six bankruptcies? Okay. But he's going
to
do it with the American government.
It.
Yeah. We're going to do it with the American government if we're not careful. Right. Jess has heard me say this over and over and over again. If China calls our notes, we're done.
Yeah.
And we're taking them off.
Yeah. And the difference is that you would never hire this man to run your company. But politics is emotional. It's not a matter of sitting down. That's what I thought. The same thought that you have, doctor, when he ran against Hillary Clinton. I said, let's look at their resumes. Reality TV star, Secretary of State, 8 years in the White House, college graduate from, you know, from the best Ivy League schools. You wouldn't hire him as opposed to her, you know, but we don't use the front part of our brain to make political decisions. It's emotional.
Politics,
you know?
Is perception, right?
It is. It really is. It's all perception. And, and the Democrats, you know, first of all, the truest thing that's ever been said about the Democratic Party was Will Rogers, who said, I belong to no organized political movement. I'm a Democrat. And that's our problem, is Democrats. We're so the transgender people are so busy fighting with the gay, you know, the LGBT community, and we're so busy trying to be purists on another front, or you know, nothing's ever perfect enough for the Democrats. So we fight with ourselves as much as we fight with the Republicans. Whereas, you know, there's another old saying in Washington, which is Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line.
That's right.
And we have to take responsibility for this man being elected. But let me just bring up something I wanted to mention before about being poor, because I was on the brink of it for a long time in childhood. And it's a downward spiral, right? You take out the payday loan and you pay 21% on it. Then you can't pay that. So you take out the car title loan and you pay 30%. You just keep on going down and down and down once the spiral starts. So, and that has, as you well know, economic repercussions all across the board.
It does.
So, you know, I think that's one of the dangers here, but we're emotional about our politics, and we should. My podcast, the tagline for my podcast is Make America Think Again.
And we will come back with much more, maybe talk about your podcast. I would like to get the Money Doctor's number. I think a lot of people have money questions right now.
413-773-3333.
And we'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with Senator Michael D. Brown and Francis Fram. Financial Fitness right here on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and we have a senator in the house today.
We do. We have Senator Michael D. Brown with us, joining us once again. He's been on the show before, but we're always happy to have him back. The two of us get off often on not just politics, but economics. He's got a background in economics as well. Just before the break, we were talking about people who struggle with money. Our concern is that that class is getting larger by the moment. We're putting more people out of work. Expenses are going up, right? You know, that's what I think's going on. And I think the regular human is losing right now.
Even for me, I was thinking about, and you and I have talked about it before, trading my car, and I don't have a car payment now. And now I'm thinking, now's probably not a good time to do that. So it's hard to know whether you should put everything on hold for how long. How long is this temporary pain we're hearing about going to last? All those questions are in, like, I think, everyday people's minds.
Yeah, and the estimates are that people will tolerate this for about a year or longer. So, you know, before they really speak up, and yet we are seeing protests across the country. The areas that I've seen have been more mature adults, but I'd like to see the younger people stand up and say, I'm not taking this anymore. This is my future. And I'm not going to be able to afford to get off my parents' couch if this continues. What do you think, Senator?
Well, I think that young people, one of the places that we're in right now is they're among the most disgruntled. So I'm not sure whether they're not out there. You know, I know that I say to my kids, I found my first job out of college in the newspaper, and they laugh at me. They go, Dad, that's not how it's done anymore, you know.
Yeah.
And I have three college educated children, two of them who are now older, one's 32 and one just turned 30. They're making their way, but the youngest one, 27, can't find a decent job. She has to work as a server at night to make ends meet. And and you know, this is a different world than we had. Now, I've been out of college a long time, but we never doubted. See, this again at the emotional level. I never doubted that when I got out of college, I would have a good job and a good career and whatever I wanted, you know, from that.
Yeah, it was just find it, right? It was just like, I want to work? Yeah.
Right. Kids don't believe that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I have a 21-year-old co-host on my show just for that reason, so that we can find out what the angst is. And she is funny. She was scared to go to the protests. I protested a lot on the Vietnam War, but she is an American citizen, born in Texas, but Brazilian. She's Brazilian, but her father was stationed in the United States, and she was born in Texas. She has birthright citizenship. dual citizenship. She said, I'm afraid they're snatching people up.
You know, that's a valid point. I don't think it's any secret. I'm not advertising it, but I'll just say that, you know, for the first time in my life, I stood out with a protest sign. Now, maybe the young people are protesting online, but we need to see bodies out there. We need to see you on the news. We need to see thousands of people showed up if you're going to make a change. If you're going to affect a change in stopping something like tariffs or reckless behavior at the presidential level, you got to hit the House and the Senate on a constituency. We're not going to vote you in anymore. And that's the only way people are going to start changing their mind, because they don't have anything to lose right now. They've got control. They're just watching it happen. And I think you're absolutely right. The Democrats are not getting it done.
They're not getting it done. They can't figure out where they went wrong. And, you know, they have gone wrong, because the world has changed for young people. And we need to find a way to fix that as Democrats. And we have old saying in politics is, it's one thing to talk the talk and another to walk the walk. We talk the talk just fine. We need to find a way to walk the walk for kids, especially for young people.
Well, we were busy trying to take the high road somehow, thinking that that was going to work. And it's a little delusional these days. There is no high road anymore. There's just, you know, hang on. You talk about sayings you have. There's something that I say over and over and over again to people who come to me with financial problems, and they say, oh, I did this wrong and I did that wrong. And I want to fix what I did wrong. And they're beating themselves up about it. And I say, you know what? That's not useful. It's useful to understand what you did wrong, but now we just call it so what, and you don't do it again. You need a path forward. I can't figure out why, with some of the great leaders that we've had, we don't have that path forward. But we're too darn slow in terms of politics, right? And Trump is doing like, I do it now and I ask for forgiveness later. But laws? What are laws? Right. We don't have laws. Right. Don't worry about it. Let the court catch up with me. By the time they do, I mean, he's a felon, okay? He's in the presidency.
Is there anybody in America more experienced with the court system than Donald Trump? I can't imagine that he hasn't been in court one day in his adult life. But, you know, the difference between you, doctor, and a young person, you going out with, not that you're not young anymore, but going out with the sign, is you have context. And they don't. Young people don't. This is the era they've grown up in. My co-host was born during the Obama administration, which is hard for me to fathom.
I'm 71 years old.
Yeah. But so they don't have the context you have. You understand that there are things you can do to make the world better, and they're not sure what to do. So they have latched on to a man who says, you know, I just got to point this out, because I think this really explains the situation, is that one of my favorite movies of all times is a movie called The Music Man, about a con man that comes into an Iowa town and cons everybody. And what does he do first? First, he says, you have a problem.
There's trouble here in River City.
Right. You have trouble in River City. And that's exactly what Donald Trump's done. Yeah. He's walked in and said, make America great again. And
as
all these
kids
are saying, well, America must have been great, but something happened.
Right.
America's still great. It's always been great. But you create the problem so that you can be the solution.
That's right.
And that's what
you bring up the most important point of all of this, I think, and it's fear. People don't make their money decisions well when they're afraid. People don't make political decisions well when they're afraid. I'm going to tell you flat out, I was concerned about going out to a protest. First of all, maybe I'm not a superstar, but I'm known in the area. So I'm risking my business, right? I'm risking all the people that don't agree with me seeing me and saying, I will never do business with her. Okay. And I've avoided this for a long time. I've tried to stay apolitical, but there comes a point where I have to say, you know what? I don't care what your political preference is. When you start harming Americans, you lose my support. You lose my vote. we should not be harming Americans on any level, particularly about money. And so I really want to thank you for coming on and talking to me about this. And I'd like you to come back and we can talk more about money. I just want to say, I'd love it if you have one tip. I'm putting you on the spot. But if you have one tip for somebody just listening, just a basic family member listening, thinking, what can I do to make things better or to prepare for what might be coming? What would you say?
I don't know. That's a great question. It's a very hard question to answer. I mean, I can tell you what I'm doing. I'm trying to hunker down. I'm trying to hunker down and stay the course, right? You're a financial advisor. I live to a certain extent because I'm retired off my 401k. I'm trying not to look at it, you know, and right? Because I don't want to put myself in shock. But to talk about you being concerned about going out with the sign, you know, the Trump administration has basically required me to take my sign down. And I want to fight. I really do want to fight it. But we're going to sell our house next month. And I don't want to start a fight on my front lawn when I'm trying to sell my house.
That's
so
fear.
We're going to take the sign down.
That's fear.
That's right. And what you know, it's nice to, this is another political saying, it's nice to be loved, but it's better to be feared. It's more productive to be feared.
Yep. Well, we're out of time, I'm sorry to say. But I would say the same thing, though. I would say hunker down, watch your pennies, don't buy things you don't need right now.
Right.
You know, but this all has an effect on the economy. You stop spending, the economy suffers too. As an individual person watching your money, I think you got to do it right now.
Yeah. How about the guy that ran out and bought the iPhone and then 2 days later realized there's not going to be tariffs on the iPhone? You know, I mean, how do you make decisions in this environment?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for having me on, Doctor, and Jess, and I appreciate it. You've got a great show, and I hope people are following your advice.
Thank you very much, and we'll see you soon.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Francis, can I get your phone number?
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can visit hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
I'm erecting this sign on my front lawn on behalf of the 700,000 disenfranchised people of District Columbia. My house is the first house to come across coming in the district, and everybody that enters our city should know that the people of the District of Columbia who pay their taxes and fight in wars and are exemplary citizens do not have the basic rights to citizens.